Wow. If I do it that way, I know that's the wrong show, but we're not like infringing on copyrights, are we?
No, I don't think so.
It's time for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast. Coming at you every week to talk all the things that make us love sport. The games, the rivalries, and of course, the personalities. We are stoked that you are listening.
We believe that you're more than listeners. To quote Brian Kelly, you're family. And we're glad that you're listening to us.
Absolutely.
Welcome back, sports fans, to yet another episode of the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast, where we not only give you sports updates, but we continue to do battle daily with the forces of nature. No fire ants, no wasps, no armadillos. Just massive storms that blew through this area about a week ago, well, Thursday night in the early Friday morning, so not quite a week, and knocked out power to so many people in the area. But we are back on track. A lot of people have their power restored, and I don't know how many workers with SWEBCO or affiliate companies listen to this podcast, but you guys are absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Not only the crews that are based here, we had crews from Texas, from Oklahoma, from other surrounding states that came in, and they're out working, and we're having a miserably hot June. It's hot, it's humid. They came and they worked around the clock to get people's power restored. So kudos. Thank you so much to SWEBCO workers. We appreciate you so, so very much.
Yeah. I read at one point it was 12 states, I believe, that we had power electrical workers in that had come in and, as groups to help out during the situation. And you know, it's incredible what they had to face, because we had several thousands. At one point, was it 250,000 or something like that in and around the area? I mean, we basically on Thursday night had the equivalent of a Category 1 hurricane blow through. It wasn't a tornado. It was a storm that had sustained winds of 60 plus that gusted to 80. And I think the highest one right now is 105, if I'm not, 102, 105, something like that. It was really incredible. We've talked on this podcast about our neighbor Chris, as we call him on the show, that listens. He's been listening from the beginning. He actually had part of his fence knocked down. So it's just amazing how many people we know that have those stories about fences being knocked down, trees being knocked down, being without power. You know, you, Ben, were without power for what, 3 days, 4 days, almost 5 days, I guess. And in the midst of even all of those circumstances, especially when you think about guys that live in the area, that their families are facing the very things we're talking about, and they're still out, you know, at night, all day, trying to work to get power back to people. It's very, very incredible what those power workers have. Because the incredible thing is we've still had storms. Even after all of that happened, we've had severe storms come through at least a couple more times where everything has to be shut down. And then they have to get back out and get back to work, not only with what they were doing, but what else has happened because of the other storms that came through. So pretty incredible what they've been doing the last several days.
Absolutely. And we appreciate them so much. I'm going to have to change some of my jokes. I pick on Texas a lot. Well, it was almost like God was sending me a message today, Darren. I was driving through my neighborhood and there's an electrical truck going through the neighborhood. And it said, I don't know if it said SWEBCO or AEP of Texas. And I thought, all right. Not everything's bad in Texas.
So not only did Texas come to help out, but they came to help out and gave your house power.
I should have stopped and asked him. Longhorns, Aggies.
Yeah, you should have.
TCU. But we are grateful for all those in such positions that work so hard for us and probably don't hear a lot of thanks in the process.
Absolutely.
We do have some disappointing news to report, and that is the end of Bob Huggins' tenure at West Virginia. Bob Huggins was arrested in Pittsburgh a little before 8:30 p.m., I believe, last Friday night. They did a sobriety test that he failed, and he has subsequently resigned as the head coach at West Virginia. In coaching men's basketball, he coached there for 16 years, took them to the Final Four in 2010. And as a coach overall, 935 wins in 41 seasons, which ranks him third most all time. Unfortunately, Huggins' career ends on a down note. A 2022 Naismith Hall of Famer. He leaves under less than ideal circumstances. There's so much you can say about Huggy Bear, the great job he did coaching. He was beloved by his players, beloved and adored in West Virginia. And this is just so disappointing, Darren, on so many levels.
Yeah, very well said. And we've talked before when things like this happen, we're not here to sit in judgment or beat down on anyone. But regardless of that, you hate to see a career that had so many big moments, so many ups, end on this kind of a down, where not only is it legal trouble, but obviously a very, very clear, severe error in judgment. And for a career that has accomplished so much to end in that way, you really, it's disappointing and you hate to see it.
Yeah, as we were talking before the show, Darren, we don't throw stones at people. Right. We don't pass sentences of condemnation. But look, if you're going to go out and engage in any kind of activity that includes the consumption of alcohol or whatever, be responsible. Don't ever get behind the wheel of a car. Never, ever, ever do that. Nothing good comes of that.
No, exactly.
So history will judge Bob Huggins, but you cannot dispute his success as a coach.
Absolutely.
His record. And we wish him well in whatever comes next.
Very much so.
In his life. And no idea yet who West Virginia is going to pursue to coach their men's basketball team. You know, they've had quite a bit of success with Huggins and John Beilein before. And so it's a pretty attractive job.
Yeah. It's definitely a program that's in an elevated position that they can go after someone. You know, they don't now for right now with the timing of everything and where we are kind of in the cycles, it's going to be a little tough, obviously. But even if there's a transition period of, somebody just has the team for the year that's an assistant that has the interim tag on them or whatever, when the time comes to find that permanent replacement, if they can't do it in this cycle, they can really go after somebody that can bring a lot to the program.
We will keep tabs on that. But right now, our attention is focused on Omaha. The College World Series.
I do hear Peyton Manning this time, by the way. I hear it.
They keep showing shots of Peyton Manning in the stands.
They do.
And I just want him once to look at the camera and say, Omaha.
You know, if he knew the camera was on him, he would. You know he would. That's the name of his production company, Omaha Productions. So it'd be great PR. You know, if he knew the moment was there, he would do it.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yep.
But imagine being Peyton Manning where you know that more often than not, there's going to be a camera on you.
Absolutely.
How do you relax?
Yeah, because literally all he's doing is showing up to watch a baseball game. He's not covering the game. His production company's not doing anything with the game. He's not commentating on the – he literally is a fan sitting in a chair while his kid eats a pretzel beside him, but it's – you end up with a camera on you. I don't know how you relax.
The price of fame.
Yep.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the games. We have a couple of teams that have already been sent home.
Yep.
Eliminated. Virginia, gone.
Yeah.
Stanford, gone.
Gone.
And we have quite a some really great games. Oral Roberts has done pretty well. Of course, Wake Forest and LSU, as we speak, they are playing right now. I think it's in the sixth inning.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Tennessee has played well.
Yeah.
What else has stuck out to you, Darren?
I tell you what, you gotta, and I would say if you told anybody I said this, I would deny it, but we're recording it, so I can't really say that.
But just between you and me.
Yeah, exactly. Just between us. I don't really want anybody else to hear this. You got to give some props to Tennessee because they're in a pretty impossible circumstance, and they're still – I mean, they made the LSU game a game. You know, they got three runs off of Skeens, which, goodness gracious, you know who's done that? So they still made it a competitive game. Then they play Stanford today, win that game. And, oh, by the way, here's your reward. Because you won that game, you get to play the loser of LSU Wake Forest. The only two teams to have a number one seed are ranking this entire season. Congratulations. And you know, even knowing that that's their path, they've played good, strong ball, incredible pitching. Their bats have been alive at times, so you got to give them props. But I got to tell you, the Oral Roberts story has been a fun story. You hate it for them that they kind of had their draw as well. You know, they're right out of the bat. They have to place Florida. That's very unfortunate. That makes me transition over to Florida. Man, Florida's pitching has just been unreal. Their bats have been unreal. They just look so strong, man. They stand out to me. You know, when you look at Florida, LSU, Wake Forest, those teams are so, so strong. It's been a really competitive, really competitive games and a fun field to watch.
It is a special time of year for college baseball. Omaha is a great setting. And, you know, you watch the games on TV, those who are there, you see the fans really rally behind their teams, the excitement in the stands.
Yep.
It is so, so much fun. And we're seeing some great talent on display. Yep. And that talent starts with, no question this year, the best pitcher in college baseball, Paul Skeens.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we referenced the game, the Tennessee game, in that first round matchup or the first game of that bracket. And I believe it was his first eight pitches all hit triple digits. It was either 100 or higher. I think he got up as far as maybe 101, 102. But that's incredible to be able to have that kind of velocity and have the control that he has. You know, it's really amazing when you watch his placement. You know, a lot of guys that have that kind of velocity, even if they have two or three pitches, let's say they have the fastball, a curveball, maybe a changeup or a changeup and a slider, whatever it is. A lot of times those off-speed pitches, whether it be the changeup or the curveball, well, sometimes they overthrow it. And you'll see it, you know, hit in the dirt over to the side, and the catcher has to – you just don't see that a lot with him. It just does not happen. It is amazing his level of velocity and control.
Mm-hmm. He's so fluid. He makes it look so easy. Yep. The confidence is off the charts.
Yep.
What do you think, Darren? Number one pick in the Major League Baseball draft?
You know, I honestly feel like you can make a very, very strong case for him. But, you know, you bring up the draft. Who is the 2023 first pick of the first round this year?
I think that would be the Pittsburgh Pirates.
So I would love to hear, as a Pirates fan, and God bless you, as a Pirates fan, is that your thoughts? Should that be the number one pick?
It's been tough, but, you know, as an organization, the Pirates do have 5 World Series titles.
That's right.
It's just been a long time.
I was going to say, not recently.
People who remember the last one are slowly passing on.
It's a small group.
I like Paul Skeens as the number one pick for the Pirates. When you look at the roster that they're building, they just called up their number one pick from last year, Henry Davis. You've got offense on that roster. Of course, McCutchen, you don't know how many more years he's going to wind up playing. But with Reynolds and with Hayes, Connor Joe is having a good game or good year. Castro is doing well. They got some nice pitchers, and I think Skeens would step right into that and do very, very well. So if anybody asks my opinion, which they most likely are not going to, I would say take this Skeens kid. He's a generational talent.
Yeah. And I mean, you can look at some of the other, you know, where they're slotted as far as who 2, 3, and 4 most likely will be. And you can see that there are some strong talents. But I I agree with you. I just don't think you can very easily make the case that that guy should be the number one pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are some great players that might go number one that are equally as deserving, but right. Skeens is he's just on another level yeah. this year. And not only – I mean, he basically just about gives LSU a complete game every time he pitches.
Yeah, that's right. We'll see you the other night against Tennessee. What did he do, 8 innings? Is that mm-hmm. right? I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's incredible what he's able to do.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. But this has been a fun College World Series. That it will be continuing, and we'll be watching, as I'm sure all of you baseball fans will, to see how all this plays out.
Absolutely.
So, Darren, we've got some football to talk about, professional football, as well as the 2024 SEC college football Absolutely. Schedule. But before we get to football, let's go ahead and pause for This Week in Sports History.
June 2nd, 1947, Pistol Pete Maravich is born in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. Maravich, a standout high school basketball player, would go on to play college basketball for the LSU Tigers, whose head coach was Maravich's father, Press. Maravich is the all-time leading NCAA Division I scorer with 3,667 points scored and an average of 44.2 points per game. All his accomplishments were achieved before the adoption of the three-point line and shot clock. And despite being unable to play varsity as a freshman under then NCAA rules, he played for three NBA teams, including the New Orleans Jazz, until injuries forced his retirement in 1980. Pistol Pete is one of the youngest players ever inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, and is considered to be one of the greatest creative offensive talents ever. He died suddenly at age 40 during a pickup game in 1988 as a consequence of an undetected heart defect.
Oh, thank you.
Wow, 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 wow. If I do it that way, I know that's the wrong show, but we're not like infringing on copyrights, are we?
No, I don't think so. But that was well done, by the way. We obviously didn't talk about that beforehand. That was Sanford and Son, is that correct?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Very well
and
done.
That was all the voice right there.
That's
that
right.
was the you know, you and I, we grew up in churches that sang a cappella, so we started using our voices to make the sound of instruments.
We know how to use our voice to do anything, right?
We can find a loophole anywhere.
That's right. See, I believe the a cappella company, the way their cassette tapes were aging ourselves in every way imaginable, always said all voices anatomically or vocally produced, right? So, you know, there's your loophole.
Sometimes with the help of a synthesizer.
That's right. No. And computer programming, but still.
Although we never did very well with beatboxing, we should have never gone down that road.
No, I think you're definitely onto something there.
Let's talk about some professional football and the playoffs. The USFL has come down to the playoffs, and Darren, you're on the edge of your seat.
Absolutely.
You love the USFL. Get us ready for the playoffs this weekend.
Well, you know, there's a North Division game and a South Division game. And since we were just talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates, we'll continue on the Pittsburgh theme. The Pittsburgh Maulers found their way into the playoff by ending the season on a 2-week winning streak and ended up going from 2-6 to 4-6, all while watching the Philadelphia Stars go from 4-3 to 4-6 and play themselves out of the playoffs. So on Saturday night, the Pittsburgh Maulers will play the Michigan Panthers, which I guess we can say they've had a little bit of a turnaround this season as well, but they're still 4-6. It's 2 4-6 teams playing against each other. And then Sunday night, the Southern Division playoff game will be the Stallions, who we've talked about all season long, are 8-2, and the Orlando Breakers, who are 7-3 and who have by far been the most pleasant surprise of the season. Coach DeFilippo and that team really have turned things around and really look a lot better than they did last season. Of course, this is a new head coach this year, and you can just see the changes that have been made and the positives that it's had. So you got a 7-3 Breakers versus 8-2 Stallions, and then the next week will be the winners of those two games playing for the second season USFL championship. And of course, if the Stallions were to beat the Breakers, they will be playing to be repeat champions and win back-to-back seasons, which would be pretty cool. Of course, in New Orleans or in Louisiana, we're probably going to lean a little bit more towards New Orleans. Love to see them in the championship game. But either way, it's going to be a pretty cool representative from the North Division or from the South Division.
Yeah, I'm going to be all in on New Orleans.
Absolutely. Because
when it comes to professional football, there's not been much success since Drew Brees has left.
It would be nice to have a win. I think you may be onto something once again.
But I'm a little stunned, Darren, that Pittsburgh, the Maulers, I watched one of their games.
Yeah.
I guess I need to go back and watch. Something obviously has happened. They snuck into the playoffs.
You know, we've talked about college games before where you watch a game and it's like it seems to be a matter of who wanted to lose the most. I think the teams in the North kept handing it off like, no, you go to the playoffs this year. No, seriously, you go to the playoffs. And it was just a matter of who wanted out worse, not who wanted in worse. But like I said, the Pittsburgh Maulers stumbled into a 2-week winning streak that took them from 2-6 to 4-6 and put them in not only into the playoff game, but as the number one team in the North Division in the playoff game. It's really kind of unreal.
Sports, man.
Yeah, that's
sports.
Exactly right. And you know what? If you're a Pittsburgh Maulers fan or if you're a Michigan Panthers fan, we don't mean to be dismissive because Arlington had barely won a game and then ended up winning the whole thing and being the first season XFL champion. So who knows?
Yeah, my goodness. This is why we love sports.
Exactly.
Well, let's get into some college football news, and that is the release of the 2024 SEC schedule. Why is that a big deal? Because this is the first schedule that includes Oklahoma and Texas being active participants in the league. And we have been looking at the schedule for all the SEC teams. And before we get into who we think has the hardest and who we think has the easiest, what are some of the things that stuck out to you, Darren?
Well, I tell you, one of the very first things, and I will own up to the fact that part of the reason this got my attention is because it involves Vanderbilt. You know, several years ago, one of the decisions that the league made was that you would play every team in your division every year. Then you would have one cross-division rival that you would play every year, and then you would have a rotating two teams from two other teams from that your cross-division that you would rotate. It would be two different teams every single year. And so because of that, putting it up or setting it up that way, what happened was each school had a cross-division rival. You know, schools like Alabama, Tennessee, you know, stuff like that were set up to still stay in place. Well, two of those rivals were Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, and Kentucky, Mississippi State. And those two rivalries are the only two that didn't make it onto the 2024 schedule. Every single cross-division rivalry made it onto the 2024 schedule except for these two. And Vanderbilt and Ole Miss will not play for the first time since 1969. Which is very, very sad to see a rivalry that's lasted that long. And it's been a good rivalry, but also Kentucky and Mississippi State have been playing one another since 1990 and will not play this season for the first time in that. And that's over 30 years, 33 years, something like that. So those two teams will not play for the first time in 33 years. You hate to see it. Again, of course, personal bias. I really, really hate to see Ole Miss Vanderbilt because that has been a very fun rivalry. Even before it was established as cross-divisional, those two teams always played each other. But it's just, I guess it's cost of doing business. Something had to give in order to get Texas and Oklahoma in on the schedule. So, but that was one of the first things that jumped out to me.
I'm not sure there was any way to make these scheduling decisions without disappointing somebody.
Of course, of course.
It's tough, and those are some disappointments. I think they did a pretty good job keeping some of the huge rivalry games. Like, you don't want to see OU Texas.
Right.
You don't want to see that lost.
Tennessee, so, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, you know, Auburn, Alabama, all of those are still intact. So you do, you know, even Ole Miss, Mississippi State, you want to see those games not go away. So that's a very good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about who we think has the hardest schedule. And this is tough because we're really splitting hairs here, trying.
Right. Yeah.
Because nobody has a super easy schedule. Everybody's schedule is hard. So let's talk about, Darren, who you think has the hardest schedule.
I think you can make the case for probably two or three teams. But the one that really stuck out to me is Ole Miss. If you look at Ole Miss, they have to play Georgia and Oklahoma at home, but they also have to go on the road to face LSU and Arkansas that we may not necessarily know who they're going to look like, but LSU, Arkansas, a South Carolina team that's going to be tough anytime you go into Columbia, that's going to be a tough game. So they have some very, very difficult road games. And they also, I mean, if you look at, they're playing LSU, Georgia, and Oklahoma, who we assume is going to be, you know, another step in the right direction. You know, 2023 will go well, and then Oklahoma will continue to build. We, you know, believe in Brent Venables. To me, when you look at the fact that they're playing Georgia, Oklahoma, LSU, and have LSU, Arkansas, Florida, and South Carolina as their road games, that is an extremely, extremely tough schedule. I know they don't have Alabama on it, but still, I think that's a very, very tough schedule. Who are you? Who jumped out at you as the toughest?
I'm going to go with Georgia. Now, granted, they're playing at such a high level. They've got a target on their back. But when you look at their schedule, their home, well, not really a home game. They play Florida and Jacksonville.
Right.
Now, we don't know what to expect from Florida. Billy Napier still trying to rebuild that program, that roster. But it's a rivalry game.
Yeah.
And you never know if Napier, you know, hits the right buttons and tells his team, you know, you can shed so much baggage if you upset Georgia.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Auburn, Hugh Freeze is their next game. The Freeze effect, is it going to be longer than 1 year? Is it going to go past 2023? He has a history of winning everywhere he's went, so that could be a tough game. Mississippi State, I'm not too sure there's a lot of change in Mississippi State, and we're waiting to see how all that plays out. Then they have Tennessee. I mean, Josh Heupel is doing a terrific job at Tennessee.
Yep.
And I don't think he's satisfied where they are. So I think that's going to be a tough, tough game. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Alabama. And I don't know if Nick Saban circles games on his calendar, but I would imagine if he does, this would be one he would circle.
Absolutely.
You've got the Bulldogs coming to Tuscaloosa.
Yep.
It's going to be a nationally televised game. It's going to be tough for Georgia. Ole Miss, you know, Lane Kiffin always has something up his sleeve. Kentucky, yeah, who knows? Who knows? We'll see what Mark Stoops comes up with. And then Texas, if they prove to be, if they live up to their expectations that we're hearing, that should be a tough one. So I'm going to go with Georgia on this one.
Yeah. Even if you just look at their road schedule, they've got to go to Alabama, they got to go to Ole Miss, they got to go to Texas. That's a tough road schedule.
It is. It is. So let's talk about the easiest schedule. And this was one where you and I, we came to a quicker decision on the hardest schedule than the easiest, because you're looking and you're like, oh, ain't nobody have this easy schedule. Yeah. Goodness gracious. But nevertheless, we had to come up with one. And Darren, who did you come up with?
For me, when you look at all of the games and kind of look at the teams they're playing, I think Texas by Yeah, maybe not by far, but I think Texas is definitely one of the easiest schedules, because if you look at Mississippi State with all of the turmoil that they've gone through, who knows what 2023 is going to look like. So therefore, we don't have a clue what 2024 is going to look like. You just talked about Florida and Billy Napier. Now, they do have Georgia. At least Georgia has to come to them. We assume that's going to be an incredible game, definitely not an easy game. And they also have Kentucky. And then when you look at their road schedule, Oklahoma is a neutral site game. Then they go to Texas A&M, which, can you imagine the crowd they're going to bring to Texas A&M? And who knows, by 2024, it could be a totally new coaching staff at Texas A&M on their first year. Who knows what Bobby Petrino and Jimbo are going to look like in 2023 and if they'll even be there in 24.
But any space available at Kyle Field is going to be filled for that game.
You're very, very correct. But then you've got Arkansas. Who knows what, you know, this is 2024. Who knows what a post-KJ Jefferson Arkansas looks like? So their season will kind of determine how hostile of a road game that is. And it's time to just be blunt. Their next road game is Vanderbilt. So not only are they going to be playing Vanderbilt, which who knows what 2024 is going to be like, hopefully better, hopefully a post-2023 bowl season. But unless there is some extreme excess taking place in Nashville, getting to Nashville as a Texas fan, I just, that will be so much stinking burnt orange. It won't even look like a home game for Vanderbilt. It'll look like a home game for Texas. They don't have much of a challenging road schedule on top of having a pretty favorable home schedule. So I think Texas got the good end of the stick on this deal coming into the first year of the SEC. Who jumped out to you?
I wrestled with this one. I came down with LSU, and I don't want to put a jinx at all on LSU, but you look at their schedule, of course, Alabama is always going to be a slobber knocker.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a tough game. But then Ole Miss, you know, Kiffin is a great coach, but Kiffin typically doesn't get the players to compete with the upper echelon teams in the right. SEC. Now, if he can get a quarterback and he gets that quarterback playing at an elite level, look out, anything yep. can happen. Then they have Vanderbilt, and I'm not going to pour salt on the wound. You've already talked about Vanderbilt. Oklahoma is going to be a little bit of an unknown. Brent Venables in his first year, kind of very up and down. He's building something. I saw they're doing pretty well on the recruiting trail. So Oklahoma could surprise a lot of people. A&M, well, I got to see it before I believe
it. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not knocking the school. I'm just not a big Jimbo Fisher believer. I'm just not sold on what mm-hmm. he's doing. Arkansas, I'm a little nervous. We've talked about Arkansas, and we want Arkansas to do well, but I'm just not sure that they'll maintain that standard. Florida, an unknown. South Carolina, Shane Beamer's done great, but can he continue that? Can he be consistent? South Carolina's a tough place to recruit mm-hmm. Against the big schools. So I went with LSU.
Well, you want me to tell you why I didn't go with Vanderbilt as the easiest? Because they have Tennessee, Alabama, Texas, and LSU. and they have to go to Death Valley. I don't even have words for that. Anyway.
You know, if Missouri was better, you could also make the case for Missouri. I mean, if you take Alabama out of that yeah. schedule, you know, of course, like I said, the unknowns, A&M, Oklahoma, but Missouri is Missouri.
Yeah. But you know what? If you do look at that schedule, if Missouri, if you do have that quarterback in place, if you're Missouri, that's maybe a little bit better talent level than what you typically get, have a good running back, you know, something like, or maybe have an exceptional defense, you know, that looks like, as crazy as it sounds, that looks like a year that you're Missouri, that you win your four non-conference games, or at least three of your four non-conference games, and you could possibly sneak a win against an Auburn, a Vanderbilt, you know, a South Carolina that comes in having a bout down year, Mississippi State. I mean, that could very much be a bowl year for Missouri if things work out right.
That's a big if.
Yes, absolutely. I cannot argue.
Well, we will talk more about this, because when it comes to sports, there's always something to talk about.
Yes,
And that's part of what makes it fun. And we love doing this week after week after week. And we thank you so much. I think this is what, our 92nd episode?
Yes, 92nd episode.
Yeah. So thank you for continuing on this ride with us. We want to tell you we're taking a little bit of a break. We did this last year as well. This will be our last episode for this season. Mm-hmm. But don't worry, we'll be coming back. What date, Darren?
We come back the week after SEC Media Days. So our first...
Now, I know y'all can't see Darren, but he had that look in his eyes like a man that just was asked, when's your anniversary?
It is, let's see, the Media Days is the week of July 17th. So our first podcast back will be Tuesday, July 25th.
So mark your calendars. We will be back in the studio July 25th to get ready for the college football season. There'll be a lot to talk about. We've got some vacation plans. I hope you have a chance to get away, spend some time with your family, with your loved ones. Cherish those moments because they go fast. And
absolutely.
Here at the Brew and Shaver Sportscast, we're all about family. So go do something with your family.
And enjoy.
Enjoy the summertime. And we will be back on July 25th. Are you going to miss me, Darren?
Well, of course. And you know, I think everyone knows that we will talk quite a bit. We're still going to be keeping up with the College World Series and the USFL playoffs and championship, even if we're not recording and talking about it.
Yeah. You're not going to block my calls like you did last summer?
No, I will not. I didn't know that you could know I did that. So I learned from that. And while you do have your time off, while everybody has their time off and enjoy the summer, if you're watching the College World Series, remember, we do have on our blog JT Jazzy Self's incredible Road to Omaha menu. So there's all kinds of, and even if you don't want to use those recipes, we have all kinds of recipes for you to do some tailgate or just some summer grilling with. Those are there on the blog. Please go and check those out and use some of those during your summer family get-togethers.
Can't miss. It's going to be a lot of fun. Check out those recipes.
Yes.
Remember, this episode will... You know what? We'll do this July 25th, all right? We'll be back. That episode will drop July 25th, Tuesday at 6 a.m.
Absolutely.
On your favorite podcast platform. Listen at your convenience. Have a great month off. We'll see you the end of July.
Have a great month.
Take care.
Thank you for making the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast your go-to sports show. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show if you haven't already. Your feedback is important. Let us know what you think about this week's show. Send an email to brewandshavers@gmail.com or text to our text line, 318-390-3599. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again for listening to the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast. See you next week.